Elizabeth Barrett is a wife, a mother, grandmother, licensed marriage and family therapist, educator, eavesdropper, and emotion worker. And she uses all of these skills to address the subjects that we're all grappling with in this conversation with the reluctant therapist. Well, Elizabeth, we're grappling with a lot of stuff, aren't we?
We sure are, Brad. Happy Tuesday.
Happy, healthy Tuesday to you, too. Where are we off to today?
Well, I am, like many people, struggling with trying to wrap my head around the fires and the damage and the destruction that's happening in Los Angeles and how difficult it is to be sitting, you know, and looking out from my house and trying to imagine what's happening 3 hours away from me. But I see the images and I have friends who are affected and I watch the news and listen to the news. And so I feel a lot of emotions stirring, as I'm sure all of us do. And, you know, the sadness for all the people that are losing everything, just the whole changes in the environment and for all the animals. And then I, you know, worry for us and the future of, you know, fire danger all over the state, just a whole plethora of things. But here's who I am for today, for this hour. I feel a bit like that protective mother or sister when someone criticizes a member of your family and you think, well, no, I can criticize them, but you don't get to.
Right.
And we race to their defense. I feel a bit like that about California right now. I feel very protective of California because I feel like we're, you know, taking a lot of shots from people outside of the state. And even within the state, it feels like an opportunity. You know, this tragedy is happening and unfolding. And so there's this opportunity to just bag on California, you know, a bit of Schadenfreude, right? The experience of having pleasure and joy and self-satisfaction over someone else's loss and failures and suffering. And I think part of me is struggling almost most with that, with the news and even people in my, you know, world who are just piling on to all the ways that California is probably failing and all the ways it should have been prepared and all the ways that it's a terrible state. And I feel very protective. Now, I definitely have my mixed emotions about certain things, but when I hear this constant criticism rising up, I have felt this ire inside of me that's really powerful. It's like, what are you talking about? You know, just this beautiful place. California is a living environment, and it's where I've been since I was 5 years old, and so I feel almost personally attacked with the attacks on how California may not be living up to its potential, or somehow, you know, was always on the edge of despair. So I've been feeling those feelings quite a bit, and when I'm feeling really protective and that appreciation for the place gets deeper, then I feel more compelled to want to be able to help or fix or reach out or hold space or be of comfort. And then the clinician in me realizes, you know, when something gigantic happens, when devastation on this level happens in our lives, and that can be in many forms. If there's a death in the family or loss of a home or loss of job, I mean, destruction and sense of loss can happen in many, many ways. But I recognize as a clinician that it's really important that people have the time, the space to really feel the loss and really get a sense of what that means before they try to move on. You know, in a way, it's when people lose a family member, someone they're very close to, and they try to rush the grieving process and kind of get over it. And people encourage them, you need to move on and start your life again. And we tend to, as a culture, try to rush through experiences that are uncomfortable or unpleasant or that make us sad so that we can get to the other side. Because, you know, in the United States, we're about positivity and seeing the best of all things and pulling ourselves up by the bootstraps and, you know, always having this kind of positive feelings about things. And maybe that's not appropriate in all cases or at all times. That sometimes it's important to just sit. I think of the whole idea of depression and, you know, when we think about depression, I think most people now, because we've been conditioned, immediately think of a disease. Oh my gosh, someone's depressed, or I'm feeling depressed. And we jump to this sense of it's a medical disease that needs to be treated with medication, and we just avoid it. It's like depression is so bad, and, you know, get away from it and get over it and get out and do things and appreciate life. But depression has a place in the whole psyche, the whole psychic experience. If you think of a depression in the road, you know, that indentation, there are times in our life where we need to curl into an indentation in the road and just rest and repair and recover. That depression is our psyche's way, in some cases, of helping us to heal. But again, we have been taught that we're supposed to immediately jump onto the new thing or move forward or be okay or, you know, don't wallow. And I don't think that serves us in many cases. And I think in the long term, when we just shove things down or ignore them or move forward or try to just have silver linings all the time, we miss a richness in our human experience that can help us to be more grounded and more sentient and more feelings-based. Because when we push things that are painful aside, we reduce our ability to really experience joy and happiness on larger levels. You know, we condense that experiential field in our psyche. And so the gift of deep grieving is that it actually makes more space for deep joy. But we have to allow ourselves that time to experience that deep grieving. I'm feeling a lot of grief, sadness, environmental sadness, ecological sadness, human sadness. And I'm not in the middle of the fires. So I can only imagine how people are responding when they're looking out their window. Even if they're not right in the front line, it's there, it's in our face. And one of the things that made me think about this is our news, our way of presenting news is to get right into people's, you know, faces when they're going through a loss and to ask them how they're feeling. And so that, you know, moment where people are in shock and they're disoriented and they're lost and confused and frightened and, you know, how are you feeling? And it's almost as if people feel mandated to say this, well, we got out with our lives and that's the only thing that matters. Everything else was just things. And that feels really sad, that people feel compelled to just write off or ignore, you know, the place or the space that was their refuge or their sanctuary, and to just in that moment feel forced to step out and say, oh, it was just things, but we have what matters and we're going to be fine. But statistically, research actually shows that how we define our space and our place and where we are is really foundational to our mental health and well-being. And when people are ripped away from their place or their space, where they're no longer feeling like they have a refuge, they get swallowed up in this sense of loss, of disorientation, of being out of balance. Their homeostasis, right? That feeling of everything's in balance is out of balance. And when we feel out of balance and disoriented, life feels very fragile and very scary. And when we feel anxious and afraid and frightened, we quite often jump into and make decisions that in the long term may not be in our best interest, or we're not really able to think clearly, or we're feel so clouded with grief or shock. And so we're seeing people, you know, in positions of feeling like they have to make these giant life-changing decisions days, moments, hours after losing kind of that sense of place, that identity, that sacred refuge. And yes, in many cases, it's just things. I understand that things can be replaced for the most part, and that having your people is at the end of the day the most important thing, being able to be with your people and everyone's safe. I understand that. But I don't know many people who nest their home with things that don't matter to them. That my house, my home, Most everyone I know curates their home very carefully with treasures. And those treasures are stories, and they tell the stories of who we are and how we've created our identity and what matters to us. And to see it all go up into flames or wash away in a flood or in all the ways that people can lose all of their treasures, to me is profoundly painful. Because, again, most things can be replaced, but treasures can't be replaced. And the memories that go with those treasures, those stories, yes, they still exist, but there's a comfort in that. You know, why do people feel comfort and take refuge in churches? Because not the bench, it's not the, you know, the sitting in the spot, it's what they're surrounded by in these sacred places that give it identity and a feel. I know where I am because I see the symbolism that tells me that I'm in a sacred space. And for many people, walking into their home or being in their home is that same feeling of coming into their church. And that's the sense of deep loss that really has a hold on me right now. The amount of people that are mourning their treasures and mourning their sanctuary. And that, yes, things can be rebuilt and yes, things can be purchased, but that's very much that Western model of materialism and, you know, not putting a value too deeply on things like that. We for some reason tend to shy away from the idea of treasures or sacred things. And I don't know why, because when a child is frightened and they wake up in the middle of the night or they go someplace, what's the thing that parents have to remember to pack, right? What is their sacred object, their stuffed animal or their blankie? There's a reason why we don't forget those things, because a child's sense of safety and well-being is wrapped up in that. And so I'm feeling that right now, like, what are those sacred things? And people will say, what do you grab if you're leaving your home? And this kind of part of the topic today, I'm interested in, I was like, what are those things that you grab if you have to have a go bag? And what do you throw in there? Because a lot of people right now are having those thoughts, you know, where should I put things? And I wonder how many people actually think of their treasures, because we think of, you know, stocks and bonds and portfolios and permits. And I'm just thinking of the big, you know, black metal case we have in our house and what's in there, all of the car titles, but nothing in there is my treasures. And even now, you know, photos are also sacred, but we can keep them in other ways. We can actually reproduce them. So I am curious, is what are the treasures that we would grab if we had to run? And that's part of it. The other piece is about how do we create space and home, because a sense of place is different than a home. A home is in a place, but that sense of place is all the landmarks and the signage and the smells and the vistas and the views that give us a sense of, ah, now I'm home. And I want to talk about that today as well, is that how do you define, how do you know when you're in your place? What are those landmarks or those signs or those vistas that tell you, ah, I'm home? And for the people who have lost everything in fires and in floods and all the ways that we've had devastation more rapidly in the last few years, how will these people come to redefine their place? So this is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, feeling a bit heavy in the heart today for sure. And I'm going to invite you to be part of today's conversation. Our number is 805-781-3875. You can also join me after the show by sending me an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. You can leave a message on Facebook or Instagram for The Reluctant Therapist. I'm happy to respond that way. You can listen to previous shows by visiting us at kcbx.org, podcast our show wherever it is you find your podcasts, and look for A Conversation with The Reluctant Therapist. Hit subscribe, and we will be there to listen at your convenience. So we're going to take a moment to catch our breath, and then we'll be back to continue the conversation right here on Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX.
Sitting in a park in Paris, France, reading the news and it sure looks bad. They won't give peace a chance. That was just a dream some of us had. Still a lot of lands to see, but I wouldn't want to stay here. It's too old and cold and settled in its ways here. All the California, California, coming home. I'm gonna see the folks I dig. I'll even kiss a sunset peak. California, I'm coming home. I met a redneck on a Grecian Isle who did the goat dance very well. He gave me back my smile, but he kept my camera to sell. Oh, the rogue, the red, red rogue. He cooked good omelets and stews, and I might have stayed on with him there, but my heart cried out for you. California, oh, California, coming home. Oh, make me feel good, rock and roll band. I'm your biggest fan. California, I'm coming home.
I'm Elizabeth Baird, and this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. And today we're talking about a place, our home. How do we define it? And when we lose that sense of place, how do we go about recreating it? And how do we allow ourselves enough time to grieve that, to really sit with, to go into that depressive space and be held for long enough till we have the strength to move forward, to look for new treasures, to build that space? So there are a couple of places that feel very much like home to me. And this part of the Central Coast has been my home for 38 years, I think, that long. And there is two places. One, when I'm coming down from the north and I come up over at Cuesta Grande and I see out over San Luis Obispo, I have that first breath, that first, I know where I am. This feels familiar. And then the second one is rounding the curve into Shell Beach and looking down the coast. And that's the, I really know where I am. And I have those landmarks of looking out to Point Sal. And there always seems to be a pair bond of hawks that are living on the rocks between the northbound and southbound lanes on 101. And looking out to the right, you know, to see what's happening in Pirate's Cove or the pier out to Pismo. All of those landmarks. And then the smell of the ocean. And also, weirdly, I love the fog, that nice heavy blanket of fog that is often there that feels such a calm relief. And that feeling of place is so visceral. And I was looking at the pictures of the destruction in Los Angeles and in both of the fires, all the fires. And my first thought was, how would people find their way home? Because all of those landmarks, the signage, those distinct markers that tell us we're here have disappeared. And in some ways that feels more, would feel more disorienting to me than almost anything. You know, to know that the house, I have a photo of the house or a picture of the house, or I know what that space where my house sat is. But it's almost this bigger feeling of place of, where do I fit now? Where am I in this vast openness? And I would imagine that that feeling of overwhelm, that you're now, you know, not just a speck in the universe, but smaller than a speck in the universe, because you don't even recognize any of the landscape around you. And I wonder if that's what it would be like to land on the moon, where there's nothing familiar about that, that you can't, you know, put into place. Like if you're on Earth, you recognize an ocean or a stream or a lawn, but you land on the moon and it's just nothing. And I wonder that what that does to your psyche to have absolutely nothing familiar in front of you. And that other place of home, that psychological connection to what place is not just about the home or the things or the vistas, but it's that interaction between the people in the place and the environment and how the two kind of go hand in hand, or they interact with each other. You know, there is this dance, because our communities are populated by people that we may not know, but we know. I don't know if you ever had that feeling. I might go, you know, downtown or go someplace, and I have a feeling that I'm a stranger because no one looks familiar.
Yep.
And I always have this sense I should know someone or something, because these people have populated the environment that I've been in for 39 years. So that's, imagine if everyone now is gone, how do you find your orientation again? How do you find that settling? So that's one place that my brain is going, is I really am curious to know how people define, like, how they know when they're home. What are the landmarks you see? Two, if you had to leave, what treasures would you think to grab? Any treasures would be important to you? Or is it really just about getting out the door? So those are two questions. Our number is 805-781-3875. Brad, what do you think?
Well, I've thought about this a lot in terms of what would be the most meaningful thing for me from a personal standpoint. And if I had to just pick one thing that I would grab with me that would represent me, it would probably be a guitar that I made out of a kit, because it's got my name on it. I stained it. I glued it together. And it was a gift from my wife. Hmm. And so that to me, and I've got dozens of them, but if I had to narrow it down, it would be this one piece, because leading to my next thought, which is about home and memories and pictures, and in the opening segment, I think one of the things that really gets us here is that all of these things that we have in our home, they're not just things. They're evidence that we were, that we existed, and that we had these passions and desires. You know, if you come around to my house, or probably your house, and many people, if you look around my house, you'll get a lot of information about who my family is, what my family is all about. And these items and these things, they not only tell people who we are, they're comfort for us, because they prove that we were. And I think the loss of everything is, you know, that is one of these things that it hits psychologically, because now who will ever know whether I existed or not?
Yeah, there is that piece of the human ego, yes, that we all have. And again, we're so quick to say, well, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. We're alive, and that's fine. But I think it's important to recognize that it does matter. You know, we do, as I mentioned, we do curate our nests in a way that's really important to us. And so what would be those treasures? One of our friends, we had this conversation this summer. I don't know why it came up, but he said that his treasure would be his bicycles. He has two of them, and he's an avid rider, and those would be the things that would get crammed in the car. And so I find that fascinating, of what would be that thing that we would grab, or those things, or what box would it be that we would take out the door? You know, the whole idea that we would have to rebuild everything all over, I also would feel so daunted. And I wonder how, you know, when people are rebuilding, do they take that opportunity to just start from scratch? You know, I want to do something totally different, or that sense of, no, I want it to be exactly the same. I want to be able to come home and have it be familiar. And I want it to be the way it used to be, because I want to be able to hang on to that. Because, you know, I think for some people, and I've had that feeling at times myself, that this idea, this fantasy that maybe I'd like to strip it all away and start fresh and have a totally new identity, that also sounds sometimes appealing. But in that fantasy of starting all over and getting rid of all, in that fantasy, I've never lost all of my life. I've never had the destruction of everything that I cared about. I think in that fantasy of a do-over, my life as it is now kind of gets put in a bubble somewhere in a box waiting for me to change my mind. And that goes back to my protectiveness for the state of California, because again, I've had a lot of feelings of defensiveness, anger at the attacks in California. And I have to admit, I had gotten, you know, a complacent feeling about California and did some searching and felt like maybe there was another place over the rainbow that might have been, you know, better for me or my husband or our life, a start, a do-over. And we looked and looked and, you know, explored different places and have lived different places. But it has always brought me back to California in the sense of appreciation and, you know, the list goes on and on of all the ways that it's magic. But I want to connect this even more to our psychological well-being as community and culture. But if you'd like to join in on the conversation about those treasures of your life or how you know that you're home, what are the landmarks or the landscape, our number is 805-781-3875. That's 805-781-3875 to join the conversation. But last week, the outgoing Surgeon General Vivek Murthy wrote a letter that he shared with People Magazine, and I came across it, urging Americans to rethink how we're living our lives. And I was going to use this letter as the foundation of the show today anyway, but it just fits so well into kind of the whole experience of devastation and loss and reconstruction. And he starts the letter talking about how his father said he had never felt emptiness, that painful kind of gnawing feeling that something is missing, until he left his farming village in rural India. And Vivek, in his letter, says that was remarkable to him because this was a place that had no electricity and, you know, no food most of the time and didn't have enough houses. But it was a village of people who knew each other and they shared food and they looked out for each other and they took care of each other and they helped out in a crisis. And this memory, this conversation with his father, got him thinking about the connection between his father's story of missing that deeply connected relationships to his village and the ongoing pain and unhappiness so many people in this country experience, the levels of depression, anxiety, and loneliness. And he goes on to say that stress and disconnect are common when we suffer economic hardships or worries about the future or negative headlines that dominate our feeds because we really should only take in so much information that's negative at any one time. But he said, after years of reflecting on all of the stories, although the economic hardships and worries about the future are a piece of it, what he's come to see and believe is that there are three essential elements that actually fuel our overall fulfillment and well-being, and those are relationships, service, and purpose. And that with those three things in place, all of the other hardships, worries, negative headlines tend to be diminished. They tend to not have the same impact on our mental health. And so for that reason, he's calling on us, on Americans, to change our focus of our lives, to change the way that we have prioritized what we're going to do with our life and focus on relationships that keep us grounded and bonded to each other, to service, either formal volunteering or informal small acts of kindness, helping each other, and finding a purpose, something that gives our life a sense of direction and meaning. And then together, all of those three things, according to Dr. Murthy, form what he calls the triad of fulfillment. Now, we've talked about that in the show because I have talked numerous times over the last 15 years that there is an understanding that there are four tenets to good mental health, and they are deeply connected relationships, meaningful work, service to others, and good health. He's brought it down to this triad of fulfillment of just simply relationships, service, and a sense of purpose. And it got me thinking about where we are right now, just in Los Angeles, but there are areas of trauma and devastation all over the country. But let's focus on Los Angeles. As we move forward to rebuilding or recreating, maybe it's an opportunity to reconstruct how we create a sense of place. And in this sense of place, an opportunity for people to create healthier relationships grounded and bonded in looking out for each other, how we build neighborhoods or how people work together in neighborhoods or the expectations, how we bring service into the act of rebuilding or recreating communities. And then this idea that all people want to feel like they matter or that their life has purpose. And how do we build those opportunities into this next phase of having to recreate the spaces that have been lost? This is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. Our number is 805-781-3875 if you'd like to be part of the conversation. We're going to take a quick break, come back, take your calls, and continue the conversation right here on Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX.
Well, East Coast girls are hit by really dig those styles they wear.
Elizabeth Barrett, and this is a conversation with a reluctant therapist, and our number is 805-781-3875. I'm just curious what's on your mind right now. This is a lot of heavy-hearted feelings on my mind, thinking about what would be those treasures I would take, and how is it that I define when I know I'm home? I mean, what would that be like to not even be able to recognize that place where your home once stood? And even it's like going back to your childhood home or neighborhood and everything feels so small or different than you remembered it. But then to have it not even be there. I remember when my husband and I went on our honeymoon 40 years ago, and he really wanted us to go up to Newport, Rhode Island, because as a kid, his dad had been stationed in the Navy in Newport on this cove. And he'd always talked about how much he loved it. And he learned to sail there, which has been fundamental to his life. And he had just great memories and stories of the whole place. And so we got there, and I could tell that he felt really confused, because he said, I know this is a cove, but nothing looks familiar, because they had torn down all of the Navy housing where he had lived as a kid and replaced it with other things. And so I could tell he was so disappointed. And there was also that sense of almost like shock or confusion, because nothing that had been so vivid and familiar in his memories even existed anymore. And how to put that into perspective, or how to even, you know how to think about it anymore when it's no longer the same. And so with this, you know, inevitable having to recreate place where destruction has happened, here's what I think would be a powerful prescription. According to Dr. Murthy, the outgoing Surgeon General, 1/3 of all adults and about half of all young people are struggling with loneliness. They're isolated, they're playing too many video games, they're not connected to their community. This really started decades ago with the book Bowling Alone, that talked about how we really were not going out and joining bowling leagues or being a part of service organizations or, you know, participating in community events the way we had in the past. And that warning a few decades ago said, if we don't continue to create community, we're going to have a mental health crisis. So here we are in 2024 with 1/3 of adults and about half of all young people struggling with loneliness. And loneliness is said to be really the driver of depression, anxiety, and suicide and suicidal ideation. You know, we've been told a story that it's a biological chemical change that causes these things, but it really is not in most cases. It's really loneliness and a sense of purposelessness. Dr. Murphy also says that the majority of our country is not engaged in any formal or informal service to each other, which is surprising to me because we're considered one of the most generous populations around the world as far as being of service or participating in nonprofits. But at this period of time right now, we have a kind of dirge of people that are volunteering their time or participating. And the informal service is an interesting one as well, because that's more kindness, random acts of kindness, or helping a neighbor when they're sick, or going over, you know, making sure their garbage cans get pulled down, those simple things that connect us to each other. And then he finishes the statement by saying a majority of young adults say that they have little or no sense of purpose or meaning in life. So what if in the retasking or the recreating of place in Los Angeles, people are brought together, are invited to come together, they're put to work. So a lot of these young people who are strong bodied and, you know, needing some sorts of direction, needing some sense of purpose, were put to work, like Job Corps, getting involved in cleaning the neighborhoods and doing that kind of physical labor work that actually is really good for the psyche of young men, because the masculine psyche does well in acts of physical service. And so out of the video games and into doing something that they get to see at the end of the day actually is making a difference. And then they create a cohort with other young men and women and people who are working together for a common cause, a common outcome that gives them a sense of belonging. Like, that's a great start, because there's going to be an enormous amount of work that needs to be done to clear and clean and reshape and reform. And there's clearly a lot of young adults who would benefit from this opportunity. And the thing that's challenging about this idea is that very few young people are going to say, oh, I'd love to do something that makes me sweaty and dirty and feel exhausted and off my phone and not on video games. And very few people are going to willingly volunteer. The interesting thing about service is that it tends to feel good after, that people look back on the event and go, gosh, I'm so glad that I participated in this. I'm so glad that I put the time into it. It feels so wonderful. So this service piece of my proposal will have to be a bit mandated, would have to be a bit forced, would have to be a bit required, almost in a draft sort of way, which I know makes people cringe just hearing that word, but being drafted into service to the betterment of your community, I think that would be a good use of that.
Wouldn't it be great, I mean, to give some kind of college credit for that kind of service?
Sure.
You know, build in a benefit. But I think your point is definitely right on, that our youth today are not inclined to go out and do that on their own without some kind of incentive built into it.
And the only reason they would know to do that is if the elders in the community had taught them from a young age the value of doing that. Because you can't know to do something if you've never been modeled or shown or taught that that's something of value to do. So I am going to say it. I propose that we draft young people into the work of rebuilding and repopulating the communities. And along with that, not just the willy-nilly, there's, you know, 5,000 people or 100,000 people all individually planning their house and rebuilding their neighborhood, but it becomes more of a community experience where people come together and they talk about what gives this place meaning to us. How do we orient our neighborhood so that we're talking to each other, or we're walking by each other, or that we're connected? Like, here is a chance, an opportunity to create a sense of community that, and an environment that actually, I can't think of the word, supports the mental health and well-being of the people who live there. And when you have people come together and do the planning together, they feel more vested in the community that they create, and they feel more vested in each other, and they're more likely to be protective of each other and more protective of the place. So to have the wherewithal, I'm not sure how it's done, but to have the wherewithal, instead of just moving forward with a bunch of construction crews coming in and rapidly rebuilding everything, to take a breath in a moment to say, how do we create place, not just build a neighborhood, but create place? And place is that sanctuary feeling where we feel secure and protected and connected and not isolated and not lonely. Because you can be in a neighborhood surrounded by people. You can be in an apartment building surrounded by people and be completely lonely and disconnected unless the community itself has built-in community building events like a potluck dinners or, you know, gardening event that are kind of expected that everyone participates in. I don't know why we don't have more expectations for the buy-in and commitment of citizens to make the place they are a better place. Because when you become a citizen, you are a citizen or you're born here, however you are an American, there are rights and responsibilities when you become an adult. And part of those responsibilities are to give back and be part of the collective well-being. And then the last piece of it is we're talking about service, we're talking about purpose, and then we're talking about relationships. And to have a way of marking that these things are happening. Because one of my ongoing frustrations is that we have this kind of cultural call for more health professionals. We need more mental health clinicians. That's what's going to fix it. And mental health clinicians will tell you that we can't fix it. We can't fix everyone because it is much more of a societal epidemic of mental health issues than individual problems. And so it really is a societal issue that needs to be addressed. But if we could have the buy-in or focused experience that creates purpose from doing the work and community by building together and, you know, that sense of service. And then the mental health professionals can tap in a way of checking in. How is this feeling for you now that you're doing these things? You know, how can we build on that? Because that really is what mental health professionals do well, is that we can help people who are already ready to do something, who are already in the midst of doing something, to feel continued encouragement and to be able to recognize that they're doing something of value, because value builds on value and recognizing value. There's a great quote that I have on my desk at home that says, "Therapists are wonderful at recognizing when people are drowning. Good therapists are able to remind people that they know how to swim."
Wow. Spot on. Spot on.
Our number is 805-781-3875. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. Okay, so the other piece of the question, besides the treasure, and you said your guitar, what are the landmarks? Like, where is the spot that you hit when you're coming back that you see and go, ah?
It's going to depend on which direction I'm coming from. If I'm coming from the north, it will be much like you. Once I get to the top of the grade and start heading down towards San Luis Obispo, mm-hmm. that's where I start to feel at home. Then once I make the turn to Shell Beach, that's where I really feel like home.
Mm-hmm.
And because I always think of my mom, who always wanted to move out here and live on the coast. And I go by all of the hotels that she loved to stay at. And it connects me not only to the home I've had here for over 30 years, but the home I had in the north for the first 20 years of my life. And it connects those two pieces. Mm-hmm. The next thing for me is as I head further south towards Napomo and I see the hills on the side there, that's when I truly know I'm home, because that's going to take me to my family, my new family home that we are celebrating 13 years of living in, very soon, actually. And so those are the landmarks coming from the north. From the south, it's going to be, it'll start after the tunnel, mm-hmm. you know, just before you get to Solvang and to Buellton, and probably really starts to come into play when you get to Orchid as you're heading down, because then you know it's just another 20 minutes or so for me, and then I'll be truly at home. And that's when I really know, because I have connections, deep connections that I've made over the last 30 years to so many places in this area, and that just gives me that sense of grounding.
Well, and that, again, back to kind of the opening of this show, was if it's all gone, if it were all gone, and all of these things that are recognized for us, and I'm thinking of all the people that are kind of wandering and still wondering as we have the ongoing, it's not over yet, things continue, but I think of the people who went through the Paradise Fires and Hurricane Sandy on the East Coast. You know, my family is from there, and it actually, the eye of Hurricane Sandy ended up right in our town that my grandmother had raised my dad in. And I remember the first time I had been there after the storm, nothing was familiar, that same kind of having it all go away and having it be gone. And the idea that when people are going through this tragedy, their first thought, not their first thought, but the first thing they often feel compelled to say is, well, we made it out. We're okay. All that stuff is stuff. We'll replace it. But I still think it's so important to allow people to have this like deep grief and to be able to process the fact of losing these things that just felt like maybe things now, but were treasures in hand chosen and selected for a reason, and that there is a real strong psychological sense of well-being that's connected to wherever our safe haven is, you know, whatever that place is we call home. I just think even when, if you stay at a hotel or when we go camping, and when we go on camping, you're setting up your campsite and we're always creating it like that little home away from home, that safe space where you put the tent and have the fire and you put everything in the tent and getting it all put together. Or, you know, when you take the kids and you go on a trip and it's so important that they have their special blankie or their doll so they can put it in the bed because the bed feels safe. It's like sometimes I wonder if we underestimate the importance of having these places that feel secure. You know, even on the Habitat for Humanity website, they have, I was looking at kind of the definitions of how we what home is to us. And Habitat for Humanity says, a home is a safe haven, a comfort zone, a place to live with our families and pets and enjoy with friends, a place to build memories, a place where we can truly be ourselves. And then there is that other piece that if we lose that sanctuary, if it's all gone, that's that self that inhabits that house, doesn't disappear, but that self has to kind of go into hiding, and we live in what we call our public self. Murray Bowen would call it that public self or the pseudo self. That I find that exhausting, that all day long, if we are having to be in this kind of survival mode and kind of projecting the sense of being okay and it was just things and I'm moving on and being in our best behavior, you know, that all of us kind of our civilized self, that's really tiring. And to be able to like escape to that place where we can truly be ourselves is one of the most important psychological respite that we can have. You know, when you think about psychotherapy, and one of the reasons psychotherapy is so powerful is that you go into a space with another person, and the way a therapist creates their office is really important. It's, you know, has to feel warm and inviting, the way the chairs are set up and the art that's on the wall and the lighting in the room and the temperature of the room. It's all very carefully put together so that when someone comes in to open up and share their stories, that they feel they can completely relax and be themselves. And so I think it does us a disservice to act like when we lose these sanctuaries, it's just things and we'll build it again.
You know, we did have a caller who called in, didn't want to go on the air, but she said that she and her family have been collecting items to send down. And that's kind of one of the ways that they're kind of coping with all of this, to just be of some help. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I think that's a good opportunity for all of us to provide some kind of assistance, whatever we can. Now, according to some information we got earlier this week, they don't need T-shirts, they don't need clothes, they need meaningful items down there. So I think for those of us looking for something to do, kind of seeking out opportunities to help them out, mm-hmm. is one thing. But circling back to your conversation, think about the 41 fire, you know, and how disorienting that was at that time and how it changed the landscape. Did much the same, wouldn't you say, to the people that lived in the area?
Well, I think, of course, in any disaster situation. I mean, if you're in a war zone in Gaza or in the Ukraine, they're still reeling with the loss of place and rebuilding, you know, after World War II and having to recreate place. I mean, human beings are pretty effective at destroying place. We've been pretty effective at destroying home and sanctuary and refuge for, you know, millennia around the planet. It's something that we tend to experience over and over again, displacing people from their homeland and wondering why they spend generations wanting to get back to that familiar place. I mean, this is not a new experience for humans. I think what I'm leaning into is to be able to feel okay recognizing the sacredness of place and the sacredness of refuge and sanctuary, and maybe to be able to sit in that place and feel the mourning and feel the loss before we jump into moving forward, because that tends to be our way in Western society and the American culture is, yes, this bad thing happens, but gosh darn it, I'm okay. I'm going to dust myself off and tomorrow I'm back at it, whatever that is. And I'm saying, let's take a beat and a breath and be able to be more intentional as we move forward. Our number is 805-781-3875. And I do want to add that in lieu of sending items, it's really beneficial to send money and gift cards for places to people go and repurchase their own items. So please think about that as well, because we have friends who lost their home in the Paradise Fire, and they really just wanted gift cards so that they could repopulate their home on their own. All right, 805-781-3875 is our number. And Linda, you're on the air.
Hi, Elizabeth.
Hi.
Hi. I'm surprised more people aren't calling in. But
me too.
I'm so overwhelmed right now.
Yeah, I agree.
But I really, really appreciate your voice of sanity right now.
Thank you.
I just want to talk about something that I consider a miracle that happened in Pacific Palisades.
Yes.
The firefighters were able to save the SRF Lake Shrine. Mm. And there was very little damage. They lost a couple of outbuildings and a small dormitory. And I guess there was damage to the Waldorf school there. But other than that, the SRF Lake Shrine is still intact. So, talking about sacred space.
Yes, and Linda, tell me about that space, because I don't know if I'm familiar with it.
Oh, the Self-Realization Fellowship, Yogananda's Lake Shrine. Mm-hmm. It's on Sunset, almost at Pacific Palisades, but at Palisades Drive, whatever that is, Pacific Coast Highway.
Okay.
So it was right in the beginning of the fire,
mm-hmm.
And everybody was evacuated safely, and it's just, it's just. I think it's a miracle that it's still standing.
I do too. And also that representing that sacredness, and that for some people to have that gives them a sense of this place is still okay. I think of the tree, the famous tree in Lahaina, right, that everyone was hoping would be able to come back after the fire last year. And everyone was so happy when some green growth came forward. You know, any of those places that remind us of the sacredness of space is so important.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, Linda, thank you for taking the time to call.
Okay, thank you very much for everything you do.
Thank you. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and our number is 805-781-3875.
And Elizabeth, Summer called in. She didn't want to go on the air, but she did want to make a good point about helping the animals, which mm-hmm. is something that, with five cats at my house, that's the other thing that's been percolating during this hour is, oh my gosh, I need to make sure I've got enough space that if I needed to pull all five of them out, I mm-hmm. could put them somewhere separately and get them where they need to go. Summer did say that we should consider bringing food and money to the shelters to help out the animals too.
Yes,
which
absolutely.
Is, one of the things I saw online was a woman who was being let back into her property, and there was not much left of it, but her dog came running through the gate to her, and it just you feel all the feels at
you
that
feel
point.
All the feels
yeah, all
and
of them.
And we should allow ourselves to feel all the feels. I think if anything at the end of the show today, that's the permission that I want everyone to give themselves, is we don't have to jump right in and bootstrap up and start, you know, moving forward. We can sit with and appreciate the miracles of things that survived, and to sit in these places that have been forever changed and altered, and just be with that before we start to reconstruct it again. Because I think if we can use more intention in moving forward and build with a sense of refuge and sanctuary, and think about the treasures that we curate in our lives, and to really give that sense of beauty and care into the things that matter to us, those also help us derive a sense of purpose and meaning in our life. Because if, as you know, Vivek Murthy said in his final letter as the Surgeon General, that we're missing this sense of service and purpose in relationships, well, part of that sense of meaning and purpose can be in how we create the life that we live, and how we nest the lives that we live, and then how do we include people into those, to our lives. And I know, I have no doubt that everyone I know is feeling like they need to help and be of service right now. And so follow those feelings, be of service in all the ways that you can, because that will fill your tank as we move forward. And we always are in need of having our tanks filled so that we have the energy to be of service and to be of love to others when they need it.
Elizabeth, I have to break in. Your husband called, but we're running out of time here today, so we gave him the spiel, and
yes,
he wanted to make sure that you knew that he would grab the boat and the cats.
Well, good. I'm glad he's got those covered so I can think about other things.
I'm happy for the cats, the boats. That's between you two.
Oh, honey, thanks for calling in. This has been A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. If you'd like to continue the conversation, you can send me an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. Send me a message on Facebook or Instagram. Listen to previous shows at kcbx.org or podcast our show and share it with others. Take good care of yourself. Thank you for tuning in and supporting and listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX.
All the leaves are brown.
All the leaves are brown.
And the sky is gray.
And the sky is gray.
I've been for a walk.
On a winter's day.
On a winter's day.
I'd be safe and warm.
I'd be safe and warm.
If I was in L.A.
If I was in L.A.
California dreaming.
California dreaming.
On such a winter's day.
Stopped into a church. I passed along.